This is the EWN Radio Network.
She's smart. She's successful. She's an executive. She's an entrepreneur. And she's the chief executive of her story. Who is she? She's you. Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network, your Power Lunch Hour keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome to the Power Lunch, sponsored by Enterprise Capital, your business partner for commercial financing. Welcome back. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, joined by my co-host and better handsome half, Jay Como.
And in spite of what most of our listeners think, I actually don't pay you to say that.
Well, we've had a full week of women headliners, and to sure you're up to speed with women like you who've made the headlines, we've brought them to you today. First, we'd like to engage you on our social media platforms. If you came to us via our website, www.ewnradionetwork.com/power-lunch, you should be able to find the links to our Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus pages. Please follow us and we will follow you in kind. Also, if you found us via Blog Talk Radio, please download our mobile app on our webpage to have access to all our information and social media pages. We'd also love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at mcomo@ewnradionetwork.com. March is Women's History Month, folks, and please follow along on social media with hashtag Women's History Month and let us know who inspired you. You will also find great information on women innovators, inventors, scientists that have paved the way for people like us to do what we love to do today. But let's get started because we have a full week of women in the news. March is famous for what?
March Madness.
That's right, and it makes this week's news as the 2015 NCAA Women's Basketball Bracket was announced this past Monday. March Madness is a genius marketing effort by colleges and universities to lure in their current college students, but even bigger alumni to root for their alma maters. Jay, you don't watch college sports generally, but you do care about St. Mary's Gales.
I care about the Gales on the men's basketball side of the house. We did not make the tournament. We lost a couple games late in the season, but it is interesting that I am involved, as you know, with St. Mary's. For schools that go to the final, not the final four, but the Sweet 16. So the way the brackets March Madness work is there's a bunch of teams, like 64 or so, and they work them down in tournament fashion, single elimination. The schools that make it to the Sweet 16 typically see a 3-5% increase in their enrollment the following year due to the marketing from the tournament. That's both.
So it pays.
It pays to perform there. And also, just a quick shout to our Princeton women's basketball team, who finished the season 30-0. They're playing in the bracket, and get this, the Green Bay Phoenix. Thought that was kind of an interesting play on words. Phoenix is their mascot. That's who they're playing in the first round.
Green Bay.
The Green Bay Phoenix.
Well, every year there are critics and fans who, when the brackets are announced, and this year was no different. So as Jay, you'd mentioned, we highlighted the phenomenal efforts by the Princeton women's basketball team, who ended the regular season last week with a perfect 30-0 season. Well, on Monday, the undefeated team ranked at 13 as the University of Connecticut took the top seed again for the third year in a row. President Obama, not surprisingly, also weighed in on his for the NCAA. He picked UConn to the dismay of Princeton alums, coincidentally his wife Michelle Obama's alma mater. Well, the first games kick off this weekend with everyone hoping to have a chance to attend the April 7th Final Fours held this year in Tampa, Florida. Jay, who are you rooting for?
I'm going to go, as you mentioned, I love ASU due to our time in Phoenix. Not the Green Bay Phoenix, but Phoenix, the actual city in Arizona. And I'm going to take a look at Princeton as they go through this thing. I'm always a big fan of the Pac-12, so Stanford's in there, fourth in their conference. And we'll take a look at ASU as well. But I'm a novice at best when it comes to this stuff.
Well, I'm hoping to get more engaged, especially supporting the women's basketball team. I glanced at it while you were looking at your notes there. Just for the listeners, I'll just run through for those of you who've never paid attention to NCAA women's basketball. If you want to be a part of March Madness, why don't you go ahead and root for your team? Top 10, we've got Connecticut at number 1, Notre Dame number 2, then South Carolina, Maryland, Baylor out here in Texas, Tennessee, Florida State, Louisville, Arizona State. Gave you a moment there.
Sun Devils.
Oregon State. Rounding out in the bottom 10 would be Kentucky, Mississippi State, then Princeton, Stanford, North Carolina, Duke, Chattanooga, Iowa. And so we wish all of the teams lots of luck and congratulate them for making it this far. And it should be interesting. We'll give you updates all the way up to the Final Four. On to tennis. Did you know tennis is women's most popular sport?
Indeed. And with all the disparity disparity between income between men and women across the stratosphere of sports and socioeconomic and corporate endeavors, I think tennis is where they get the closest. I don't know that they've got to parity yet, but I think it's as close as you can get with the likes of Serena Williams making all that cash.
You're absolutely right. There was an article done in Time Magazine by Elania Doctorman highlighting the phenomena of women's tennis. Last week, we covered Serena Williams, who is the most winning female athlete with over $60 million in prize money so far. Although she's not the highest paid female, do you know who is?
I do not know.
Anna Kournikova. She beat Serena Williams in endorsements, but not winnings. Well, Serena continues to be a trailblazer in the field of sports for all women athletes. Well, that being said, tennis is probably the closest, as you had mentioned, to an equalizer for all women's sports covered right now. But here's an even more interesting dynamic. As the number of countries hosting a WTA tour and major tennis event has increased over the years, there has actually been a direct decline in the number of women, U.S. women, ranked in the top 100. Well, IBM created a graph for ESPNW titled The Changing Map of Women's Tennis. More women are entering into the stage and being hosted by their home countries. We're actually seeing the U.S. now having a tougher time and staying in the top 100. And continuing on the global front for women tennis players, also another women headliner this past week, the International Tennis Hall of Fame announced the newest inductee, Amelia Mauresmo. Let's hope I said her name right. It's French. She's a French two-time major champion and was elected to the Tennis International Hall of Fame. The 35-year-old French native now lives in Switzerland. She turned pro at the age of 14 and won both the Wimbledon and the Australian Open in 2006 and was also ranked number one in 2004 for 39 weeks. She's the first French woman to reach the top of the ranking since it was introduced in 1979. Well, she's had a career record of over 70% wins with a 545 versus 227 track, 25 titles under her belt, and she's earned over $15 million in prize money. She retired at the ripe old age of 30 in 2009, and she will be inducted into the Hall of Fame on July 18th in Newport, Rhode Island. Congratulations to Amelia, the newest inductee to the International Tennis Hall of Fame.
So my takeaway from that last piece is it's cool to be French. It's cool again to be French, and you are quite the technocratie.
Why, thank you. Moving on to more women in sports. We love our women in sports. The LPGA is hosting the 5th annual JTBC Founders Cup. It's underway at the Wildfire Golf Club at JW Marriott Desert Ridge in lovely Phoenix, Arizona.
And we've spent time there. Actually, not being a big golf family, if there's a place that if I ever get good enough to golf or we ever get good enough to golf, it would be at the JW Marriott. The golf courses there are amazing. It's very scenic. It's a tremendous place to be.
And it's a great time of year to be there out in lovely Phoenix. Well, the Founders Cup was established 4 years ago to honor the 13 original founders of the LPGA. The tournament being held this weekend will have a purse of $1.5 million. $250,000 will go to the top winner. And to do so, ladies have to compete over 72 holes with a par 72 to contend with. Last year, British golfer Kerry Webb took home the purse and has won the tournament twice since 2011. Scott Bordeaux of the Arizona Central, following the tournament, says he thinks that Kerry is one of the top five players to watch this week. All eyes, though, are on the New Zealand 17-year-old darling and top-ranked Lydia Ko, whom I've seen at practice. Do you remember? She was over at the Las Colinas Country Club.
I do remember.
She was practicing, right?
Well, we watched her practice because everyone else was chasing after Michelle Wee.
Right. Well, Michelle Wee is also in the top five to watch. Although she hasn't had a great 2014, but she has been focusing on her acting career. She was just in Hawaii Five-0 most recently. Well, Stacey Lewis is my personal favorite and personally all-around heroes. She's expected to make a good run for the top winning. 2014 was a great year for Stacey Lewis and hopefully to see another one with this tournament. Good luck to all the women golfers competing at the JTBC Founders Cup, and we'll give you an update next week.
Well, let's round out sports with a little bit of commentary from UFC and Ronda Rousey. We talked about her last week.
And for our listeners, let's remind everyone who this phenomenal and badass is, Ronda Rousey.
Right. We did use that technical term
right,
this week.
Right, because so I gave update on country club sports, which is tennis and golf, and then wonderful world of college sports. Ronda comes to us from a sport not widely hailed by women.
So it's UFC, Ultimate Fighting Championship. You typically think of men doing this, but we spoke last week about Ronda being undefeated. And so she's actually taking a break from fighting to film the movie Mile 22. Oh. And it's about the relationship between a U.S. informant and a Indonesian police officer, a CIA agent and an Indonesian police officer, and the geopolitical battles and strife there. And so this is the second movie she's been in. She was also in Expendables 3, as I mentioned in last week's show.
Expendables 3?
Yes. A couple other things. Last week, Joe Rogan, who's a commentator and actor and comedian, a commentator for UFC, that is, said that Ronda Rousey could probably take half of the men out there. Now, he classified, or clarified, rather, his statement.
And I think Tyson came out and said that she could kick his butt.
Yeah, I didn't get the Tyson piece. I know I you that caught one. That. Rogan's not backpedaling at all. He said, look, if it's her fighting someone like Johnny Hendricks, who's 170 pounds and just ripped, probably not going to win that fight. She's 135 pounds. But if she's fighting another guy that's around her weight, she pretty much wins every one of those fights. She's going to be four steps ahead of you.
Right, but as Ronda had stated last week when asked if she would fight a male.
Yeah, so last week I indicated she's not afraid to do it. She won't back down, but she's not going to be party to a public spectacle of a man and a woman fighting and a man physically abusing a woman and being a part of that. She just doesn't think it's a good thing for society. Even if it would be a good thing for her career. So we do respect her for that. So there's a gal named Beth Correa who's 9-0.
And in UFC?
In the UFC. She's actually started fighting in the UFC the last couple fights. And she's angling for a match that should happen in August after Ronda gets done with her movie. And then there's still the talk about the Chrissy Cyborg fight, which we talked about last week as well. And apparently that's still going on.
Well, that's getting nastier. I think I saw some headlines where Christy Cyborg's mom has now gotten involved. But it's interesting that now it's become a family affair.
Waiting for President Obama to get involved as well.
Well, we've given you your update on the sports segment for the first part. We're going to go to break. When we get back, it's called Boss School. More when we return.
Are you an entrepreneur, coach, or consultant who is tired of constantly searching for the next client? Are you ready to get your expertise out of your head, into the world, and packaged into a profitable online course that delivers a steady stream of your perfect ideal clients to your door and a steady, predictable source of revenue? Hi, this is Janine Blackwell, creator of Create Six Figure Courses Virtual Bootcamp, and I've created my own seven-figure courses, and I've walked hundreds of experts like you through the step-by-step of creating and launching a profitable online course. I'd like to invite you to a free online training I'm hosting for you called The 7 Steps to Creating and Launching Your Profitable Online Course. I'm going to show you exactly how to create your course, market your course, and automate delivery of it so you can get your course up and running fast and have it work for you 24/7. You can grab your spot for this free training at www.createmyonlinecourse.com. So join me at www.createmyonlinecourse.com.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at Inter Pares Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does. Whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital, we can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At Inter Pares Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network, your Power Lunch hour keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the Power Lunch, sponsored by Inter Pares Capital, your business partner for all your commercial financing needs. Whether you need bridge financing or project funding for your next construction project, contact Inter Pares Capital to help you finance your commercial real estate project. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, joined in studio with co-host Jay Como, co-anchor, co-host.
You are Mona Lisa Como. Let's get that straight. And I'm excited for this next section to talk about Sarah Davidson, Hello Fearless. And actually some correlations that I see among a couple pieces we're going to do for the rest of the show and my lovely wife as well.
All right. Well, lucky me. We're going to go first into entrepreneur. We like to cover a new and inspiring entrepreneur every week. First update we have for you, as Jay had mentioned, is a really interesting article in the Kansas City Business Journal by Leslie Collins. She interviewed entrepreneur and founder Sarah Davidson. She's the founder of Hello Fearless. That's right. The company's name is Hello Fearless. focused on building women entrepreneurs with an educational platform and support system. Sarah invented the first Boss School, which is an online course and exclusive society of, quote, badass women, end of quote, ready to take over their businesses.
Did you steal your term?
I don't know. I think that's a new term for power woman, all right? So I've got to change that for those of you that, well, most of us that shouldn't be swearing. Well, anyhow, in 90 days, they arm women entrepreneurs with the tools and skills to whip their dream businesses into shape and finally make the money they deserve, all while creating a life that aligns with exactly who they are. Founder Sarah Davidson was featured in the Business Journal article discussing her journey to entrepreneurship. And Jay, what'd you find out about her?
Quite a bit. The correlations, again, actually, to your rise are very similar. Granted, you spent more time in the corporate space than her, but she came up fairly quickly through the rank, through startup, out of college. She graduated from Iowa State in 2007, so I'm sure about 30, I think. She worked for Anderson Partners, kind of right out of college after doing a marketing internship. She worked as a public relations director for the Omaha JC. So she was actually in Omaha at this time after college at Iowa State, which, again, correlation, you and I, frankly, spent a lot of time there. Past life, right around those years. So because we're older, we probably weren't frequenting the same places. But she kind of worked her way up through a couple startups there and then decided that she wanted to start her own consulting business. So she went from startups and some marketing gigs and started her own consulting firm, Sarah Davidson Consulting, and booked an astonishing $500,000 in revenue in year one right out of the gate.
That's inspirational.
Now you might remember, and I think you do, your first gig out of the corporate spectrum was starting a consulting business before you started a capital business, before you started a radio show. But some, again, another commonality there with the consulting gig and then to other things. And then she eventually went in and started Hello Fearless, which I think you'll go a little deeper on. But in past discussions that you and I've had about the difference between an entrepreneur and an innovator. And it's almost the perfect dichotomy between you and I. And that's not to imply that an entrepreneur isn't innovative. It's really more of a compliment that an entrepreneur takes innovation and actually executes on it. So my view is I'm an innovator. I think of a lot of cool things, but I either am too fearful or too lazy or too busy to get off my butt and actually do all of these entrepreneurial things that I think about. You, on the other hand, are... Go ahead.
I think you're giving me too much credit, and I just wanted to intervene here. I think Jay's... most recently, and we're digressing off of our normal topics...
I'm going to bring us back, though. I got a plan here.
I just recently read the book Entrepreneurial Strengths Finder by Jim Clifton. And if you've ever been in any of those executive management classes, you've taken the Strengths Finder. And so Jay and I have personally taken the Strengths Finder. We know our top five. We know all 34. We know what were the bottom 34, even though you're not supposed to focus on the ones that you're not so strong on. But the Entrepreneurial Strengths Finder, I encourage you to go get it. I think it just recently came out. And it talks about the 10 qualities that entrepreneurs have. And the more dominant you are in any of those 10 qualities, it also gives you a better chance in terms of being a successful entrepreneur or having the chutzpah to go through it. So it was very encouraging to actually go through this.
You score off the charts on that for entrepreneurialism and tying it back to Sarah Davidson, who's got a really fascinating story. So again, the difference between innovators, in my view, and entrepreneurs are the ones that actually take the innovation and make it happen. And those that don't, like me, do other things. And so Hello Fearless is a nonprofit that really helps women get over the fear. It helps take them from innovators to entrepreneurs so they can actually become practitioners in their dream. It's a pretty cool thing where she started consulting firm and now is helping others go out and get over the hurdle. They can take these great ideas and put them to use.
And I would definitely suggest you check out the website if you are an entrepreneur existing or wanting to start one. It's an interesting concept. She makes it, her content's very approachable. It's fun. It's energetic. The website's www.hellofearless.com. If you are going to the next class that's starting, I believe their next class starts on March 29th. We'd love to hear about your experience. We're personally going to reach out to the Sarah Davidson camp to see if we can get an interview with her so that she could bring the Boskal concept to our listeners so we could find out more about this ingenuity of an idea for bringing more women entrepreneurs to the forefront. So I think it's a great concept. Looking forward to hearing more about it. Moving on to other women titans in the business sector, Padmasri Warrior. She's the Chief Technology and Strategy Officer of Cisco. She's also in Forbes Top 100 Influential in Technology. Well, she made headlines this past week on Fortune with an article by Caroline Fairchild titled Cisco's Plan to Solve Tech's Diversity Problem, Starting from the Top. Jay, you read this. What did you think?
First and foremost, I think that's got to be one of the coolest names out there.
Yes.
Padmasri Warrior.
I just like Chief Warrior or Mrs. Warrior. That's a great name.
Exactly. So what Cisco found out is, in doing some analysis, is 23% of their overall staff. This is a technology company. They make the routers and the switches for the internet. Not the food company Cisco that you see on trucks bringing supplies, but this is the tech company from Silicon Valley. 23% of their overall employee base are women. And they found this to be too low. And so they decided to really focus on, first and foremost, starting at the top, bringing in a senior woman executive as the chief technology and strategy officer, and then they did with Padmasri. Then they decided that they needed to do it all at all angles. They've instituted massive efforts to, when they're interviewing, what they're doing is their chief human resource officer said, I don't want to hear, the hiring executives, I don't want to hear that not enough women or no women applied for the job. Go out and get the women. Mm. So she decided to put together very, very stringent panels that were diverse in their makeup. So panels that were interviewing for candidates to ensure that they were actually bringing in diverse candidates into the interviews. And just from a comparison perspective, how they're doing. So in 2004, the executive committee, this is the top layer of senior management at the firm. And typically it's the folks that report to the CEO, or maybe one level down, sometimes two levels down from the CEO, but effectively the top level of management. So back about 11 years ago, 11% of the executive committee at Cisco was female. That was 1 of 9. And so how have they done since then? They're now at 5 of 13, so 38%. So that's an increase from 11% to 38%. Of the executive committee are females now.
So would you say that that's because they made a conscious effort to increase those numbers? Or they're starting now to make a conscious effort?
They've been cognizant that it's something they want to focus on. They even have 3 of their directors are females, which is a good clip. And what they've decided is they're going to kick it up a notch. With Padmasri at the C level, with the other members of the executive committee, and then all the way down through the ranks. And they also have efforts for 20% of their total staff to be a part of diversity inclusion efforts in local nonprofits in the area. And they have a couple that they partner specifically with. So they basically have 20% of their staff is going to spend time at these inclusion and diversity nonprofits to basically reverse engineer. They're going down to high school and grade school females,
right,
to try to get them fired up about technology companies at the very young formative ages.
I've been involved with a number of STEM schools that are focused on bringing more women.
Schools,
right. You have to, if Cisco and Padmasri are going to make a big dent in this, we actually have to see more girls. And I say girls because it's at the educational youth level that have to show an interest in both science and math before they can even get into technology. Well, interesting that you bring her up, because her biggest contender in terms of corporate competition is, if you remember, Meg Whitman threw down the gauntlet last year and said that she was going to go after Cisco's business. So I think it's interesting to see that another great titan, a woman titan in her business, and wondering if HP's numbers look anything like Cisco's in terms of technology and advancement. But but to comment on what you were saying in regards to effectively fishing in new waters, right? So the recruiters or the human resources saying, hey, don't tell me there's no women candidates. It's a sensitive issue from a human resources perspective to purposely, from what I gathered, is to purposely only look at diversity candidates. But at the same token, you can't hire because they're a diverse candidate, but you can make sure that you try to have a more inclusive pool to choose from. And one of the things that I think companies need to do a better job of, especially women who, and men as well, it's networking. You have to go to these places where you think that you can find more reliable women candidates or female candidates. I think it's great what they're doing. You've got to start outreach into the colleges and the universities to kind of build that pipeline. And then the mentoring has got to happen as well, whether it's internal and organically growing them, or even networking groups that might happen within the technology or the women's networking group. So applaud her for doing this, because it's definitely going to make a difference. But also interesting, when I hear of Cisco, I also think of HP, because I think it's going to be interesting when HP announces its earnings later on. I don't think in the next quarter, but by the end of this year, it will be interesting to see if the gauntlet that Meg threw down in regards to taking a market share of Cisco's business, if that's going to come to fruition. But I digress.
No, and so back to a couple other things. So when Pat Masfrey started at the company, she loved to wear high heels. And
that sounds past tense. I don't have that problem. Well, mine is current.
For many, many years in your corporate life, you always wore high heels. And she actually ditched them because she felt out of place. And so she knew then, this is early in her career, so she knew then when she went to flats, which she didn't like, she didn't wasn't thrilled about doing it, she knew that she was trying to conform. And now she's back to wearing her high heels and feeling who she is, being a woman and not trying to be like everyone else. Because it's still like 77% of the employees there are men. The other piece is Blair Christie is the chief marketing officer who's working on the STEM efforts, the STEM school efforts. She actually said something that I thought was pretty cool. You could probably identify with this. They've, as you said, they've gotten better in the last 11 years. And so they've done a good job, frankly. They're focusing on doing a great job at this point. But she even said that for the first part of her career, she didn't even know she was a woman. And I mean, I think of you, right? In situations, we were in corporate America together. As beautiful as you are, we never looked at you that way because you were as tough as us. And there was none of these stereotypes that you do have prominently out there. So I thought that kind of resonated. And then eventually it sort of caught up to her that, wait, I am a female in this place. So I think that that backdrop does paint Cisco in a good light. And the fact that they want to get better is fantastic.
Yeah, and I think to some extent, and we'll move on to the next topic after this, in regards to what Peds Mari said in not feeling like a woman in the early part of a career, I think that that's a cultural thing from companies. I will say that I was very blessed that my first company, being a startup back in the day, E-Trade, and being in the Silicon Valley, you know, the Silicon Valley that you hear today of where it's very male-dominated, you know, growing up in the early 90s there when the internet bubble was happening, it was, I would say it was one of the very few communities where you could be equally as strong as a female candidate as a male candidate. I think that's changed over the years because it was pretty strong in San Francisco. It wasn't until I moved to other cities that I actually realized that, oh, wow, I am a woman in the room. But it's great to hear that she's actually standing behind and also making a path for more women to elevate into senior levels and also into technology. Let's switch on to another female executive who's got a lot on her plate. American Apparel's new CEO, she's only been at the helm now for 3 months, is Paula Schneider. She continues on her quest to revamp the edgy company formerly head by the extremely controversial founder Dove Charney. I don't even know what to say for Paula. I give her credit for wanting to take this job at the helm of American Apparel, given all of its ugly past and the controversy about how they portrayed women and teens in their advertisements. Well, they made the headlines again this week for trying to tone that down a bit.
Yeah, yes. So they were airbrushing body parts that were a little too apparent on some of their mannequins and some of their advertisements on their website. Dove Charney was a bizarre, bizarre, crazy individual who ran that company. And at one point, his net worth, and this was really just like 3 years ago, his net worth was $500 million. And he's now down to his last $100,000 for all of his antics at the company.
I thought that was more myth, and he was kind of dramatizing it because of all of the issues he had with the company throwing him out.
Their stock's down to 70 cents a share.
God bless her.
Their net loss, and so she's coming at a time, you know, they need her. So their net loss 3 years ago off the most recent financials reported was a loss of $39 million. The next year it was a loss of $37 million. And then the most recent fiscally completed term, it was $106 million net loss. Now their revenues have consistently slightly gone up over that period, 3 year period, $547,617,000 to $633,000,000. So they clearly have an expense and margin issue. Now, I would say that they certainly...
Well, the expense, do we think that's related to Dove, or is that because sales are down?
Their top line revenue is slightly up, so it's got to be a margin issue from my view. Maybe they're spending too much money on marketing. Maybe they're spending too much money on attorney fees.
Legal fees, I would
think.
That's
right. So she is a turnaround expert. She was at a company called Warnaco, which is a behind-the-scenes company that makes bathing suits for Speedo and a couple other companies. And so they were in a tough spot, and she turned them around. So she's up for the job. She got the chutzpah to pull it off. But they've got to change their image right now, and they need to keep that guy really far away from the campus.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to be tough because, you know, American Apparel, part of me wonders was part of their success the edginess of the millennials, because that's kind of the crowd that they were appealing to. They're a t-shirt, jean-wearing, loving company, but they didn't have the good technology, clean mommy and perfect kid image that a Gap has or Old Navy. And so they were competing, I think, in my mind, in that realm, kind of like how Abercrombie and Fitch was. But they stood apart for just, honestly, their marketing really pushed them apart. But, you know, their t-shirts were great, and I've never bought any, but apparently that's what set them apart. It's interesting if she can continue to have that edginess with millennials and yet tone down the image that, frankly, put them at, the, you know, what's that saying? Any marketing or all marketing is good marketing.
Yeah, even bad press is...
Bad press is good press.
Right. Bad news is better than no news. Here's the thing, right? And the other cliche is sex sells.
Dove.
Which he perpetuated in a big way. And certainly I don't agree with it, being an overprotective husband and father. But I guess perhaps if he wasn't doing the bizarre things like taking conference calls in his boxer shorts and walking around the hallways of the company that way, and being incredibly too friendly with many of his different female subordinates, causing a lot of legal fees.
I'm sorry. I shake my head because I'm thinking, at what point did you not think that this was going to catch up with you? But, you know.
When you're worth $500,000 and he started the company, he probably thought he walked on water. But it'll be interesting to see if she does have to do a complete U-turn on their branding and continuing to phase out some of the images on their website and their marketing, or will she still sell sex but tone it down, but just not walk around the office in underwear and screwing things up? I mean, can she turn it around but still keep that edgy brand recognition that they have?
Well, and I think everyone's rooting for her. I think the media and the shareholders want to see this be a turnaround, because frankly speaking, it would be a great story if she can do so. Well, that's all we have in the business updates. Not that there weren't other great women to report on this past week. These are the headlines that we thought that would be of most interest to you. When we return, we're on to politics and government. The most talked about woman this past week, of course, Hillary and Emailgate. Janet Yellen makes a stir with semantics, and the new attorney general nomination, Loretta Lynch, upon for politics. We'll talk about that and more when we return.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who've been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at Inter Pares Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does. Whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital, we can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At Inter Pares Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
She's smart. She's successful. She's an executive. She's an entrepreneur. And she's the chief executive of her story. Who is she? She's you. Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network, your Power Lunch Hour keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to our second half of the Power Lunch, sponsored by Inter Pares Capital, your partner for startups and entrepreneurs growing their business. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, joined by my handsome co-host, co-anchor, co-partner,
Jay Como.
Well, Janet Yellen, the most powerful woman in the world, made the headlines this past week for semantics. The Federal Reserve opened the door to interest rate increases as soon as June, but most of the focus was spent on what she said. Janet Yellen specifically removed the word patient in regards to a state raising rates, and in a fresh set of estimates that lowered the median for the federal funds rate at the end of 2015 to 0.625% compared to 1.125% in December. Well, the dropping the pledge to be patient is a huge change from the explicit guidance on the future path of policy that the Fed has used since the late 2008. Janet got a lot of commentary and quite a bit was spent on what she said, but it reminded me of when Alan Greenspan used to carry his bag in. Remember when it was...
If the briefcase was full, it was meant to imply that rates would go one way. And if it wasn't as full, it was meant to imply that rates would go another way.
Janet Yellen is clearly conscious of the fact that everything she says or does will also be picked up in terms of interest rates. But not a surprise there. Interest rates are continuing to stay flat. Predictions are that it will happen sometime this year, but we've been saying that now for how many years? 5, 6? So we'll see if that any changes in the next FOMC meeting.
So in the latest Emailgate news, Emailgate 2.0, Nancy Pelosi has quickly come to the defense of Hillary Clinton, stating that this is a political investigation. Republicans are investigating her emails for purely political reasons, and next thing you know, they'll be investigating her hair. Speaking of politics, 30,000 emails were deleted. These were told that they were of personal nature, but there's no way to validate it. We're taking the former Secretary of State at face value. There continues to be a push, as discussed in the past, for the server that the emails live on being sent to a third-party arbiter to take a look at that. That still hasn't happened yet. They've had emails subpoenaed into multiple committees within the House, and hence the political investigation. But ironically, if you go back a few years, political investigations or political hackery at the hands of Nancy Pelosi, a couple quotes was, "Bush, we've labored through the years of Bush, who favors big oil over consumers," which to me sounds like politics because I don't think that anyone thinks that that's really true. And there's a good one. "God bless his heart, the president." A complete failure, actually. It was a total failure. So it is politics galore. Back in 2007, Pelosi, it's interesting, both parties do this, right? They do something and then they say, "How preposterous that this is happening." And the 47 senators sent a letter to Iran indicating that whatever policies happen in the next 18 months, they're going to change it if a Republican president is elected. They were accused of breaking protocol. Just go back 8 years. Nancy Pelosi, in her anti-Bush time, went to see President Bashar Assad, who was the Syrian president, to talk about foreign policy at a time when the administration was actually quite against Assad at the time. We were putting sanctions on the country. We were trying to get Assad to move on some things, and she went and kind of gave an olive. It's an interesting sort of hypocrisy on both sides that you do something, and when the other side does, you say, "How dare you? I would never do this." Meanwhile, you did it 6 years ago. Both sides are guilty of it. At any rate, the email fiasco continues to drag Hillary down a bit. There seems to be a dip in likely Democratic voters, and it looks like she's kind of polling around 46 to 50% for likely Democratic voters that would vote for her, and that's down 15% in some polls.
When we reported about this last week, we were pretty passionate about the fact that it really is hard to comprehend in this day and age that Mrs. Clinton found it more complicated to separate and segregate her emails than by having her personal email being used for a majority of her communication on State Department topics. And the polls, I think, have been very critical of that. And again, going back to the millennials in this day and age, just like the White House took a beating for the failure to launch the website for Obamacare.
Not a big enough beating at all, given how catastrophic that fail was and how much money
But they did
spent.
Lose. I mean, if you think about what's happened in the midterms, they did. So if you fast forward that to where we are today with the recent issues, Hillary has given commentary. I wonder on both sides of the Hillary camp and in the Obama camp, if they're truly recognizing that Gen X, Gen Y, and millennials, not knowing information and hearing about it through the news, finding out about failures through third parties, email failures, communication failures, internet failures, that's hard for anybody in this day and age to actually sink their teeth into and really swallow, given the fact that these are excuses that we couldn't use in a normal day of life and get away with, nonetheless being at the top most leadership positions in the United States. And so it does continue. I think what's frightening to see is that you now have the Associated Press, who's now suing her under the Freedom of Information Act. And I think a couple of other news outlets have also really stepped into trying to see if they can force the Clinton camp to hand over more communication on the emails. What's interesting for me, though, is Trey Gowdy and the Benghazi group and committee, they've actually, instead of pressuring her to send over the information sooner than later, they're actually giving her more time. And I think that that's in a show of bipartisanship, even though I don't think anybody thinks that's the case. But still, I don't know how this is going to end. But the 15 percentage points that dipped, I think, is definitely indicative that no one can buy that stance. I think you then couple that with the fact, I think in the last week, she's come out with a couple of comments. I think even yesterday, it seems like the media fiasco on Hillary's coverage continues. She's not talking about an email gate, but, you know, she started talking about how adults need camps to go to. And that was just yesterday. And so that's starting to hit the airwaves that she's completely out of touch.
Country club?
No, camps. Resting camps. Adults need to go take a camp to go rest, which Twitter has just completely run amok with it. And I presume that that will continue to be the case in the next few days.
So continuing with Emailgate 2.0, Valerie Jarrett, the very powerful political insider in the Obama White House.
Or should we say she is the Obama White House?
We could say that, actually. So the New York posted an article that it was Valerie Jarrett who leaked the email situation.
Not specifically Valerie, but Valerie gave the instruction.
Okay.
And gave instruction to her people to give to people outside of the White House so it could not be traced. And that it was Bill Clinton's camp that had confirmed in the New York Post that they were getting phone calls from the White House offering up negative stories about Clinton. And so in this incestuous world of media, I don't think that the White House camp, if this article is true, that knew that there were some people they were talking to that were also very close with the Clintons as well.
So in the latest episode of House of Cards, in the actual shenanigans of politics in Washington, D.C., purportedly that leak was due to getting Hillary off the potential ticket and supporting perhaps Obama backers, Martin O'Malley and Elizabeth Warren. We'll talk a little bit about Elizabeth Warren shortly. Maybe O'Malley later on in some other segment. Both actually...
I heard Al Gore now. That's the most recent one. And John Kerry.
I heard FDR is coming back, right? I mean, because Al Gore is about as viable as a deceased president that started big government during the Depression.
Started the internet, right.
So honestly, I think given Hillary's beating lately with Emailgate and everything else, Benghazi, etc., O'Malley and Elizabeth Warren actually look pretty impressive, both of them. We'll talk about Elizabeth Warren. There's a lot of conservatives that want to wring their own necks hearing her name, and I might have been one of them, but she's got an interesting background, and I have a lot of respect for Martin O'Malley, who took out Bob Ehrlich in Maryland as the governor, and he's got a pretty impressive credentials. A couple other pieces on that Post article. So Valerie Jarrett was on Morning Joe with Mike Brzezinski, and he asked her point blank, did you do it? The New York Post article, did you do it? And she said, absolutely not. That's preposterous. Ironically, the Bugle call, which I think is a conservative outlet, had a photograph, and this thing's been out there a couple times. So if you remember, Hillary said the reason why she had one email was because she didn't want to fuss with multiple devices, multiple emails. It was just easier. So there's
even though it shows what she's got two devices in a lot of pictures.
There's a very recent picture 2 days ago of Valerie Jarrett completely accentuating the two device mantra. She's got a phone in her left hand to her left ear and a phone in her right hand to her right ear. So if the Post article is correct at all, I think she went out in full force with two phones saying, I can have two phones. You could too, Secretary.
Well, first off, I think in regards to the Jarrett story coming from the New York Post, I mean, everyone's going to speculate. No one's going to know for certain. But it is highly suspect, I think, for anyone right now to think that there's dissension amongst the Obamas and the Clintons. I mean, that's like saying it's a secret that Netanyahu doesn't get along with Obama. I think it's very clear.
The Jews and the Palestinians don't get along.
I think it's been an unsaid kind of handshake win. Think that the Obamas and the Clintons are on the same party, but I'm a firm believer for the Democratic Party specifically. I don't see a unified hand-holding Obama and Clinton legacy in the next era. I think it's, you know, the Clintons have fairly much dominated the Democratic Party. They're kind of the royal family of the DNC. And, you know, enter in the Obamas who want nothing of being someone's sidekick. I think there is going to be a power struggle. Obama, in some of the articles that I've read, I think there is fear that Clinton, who tends to be, as like her husband, a little bit more moderate and not enough to the left, that she might undo some of the legacy or even turn on Obama, which could very likely be the case as she starts to run for the office. And so the Obamas wanting to control a lot of that, hence them putting forth another candidate, and enter in right stage Elizabeth Warren, our next person who's up for us to talk about in Women Headliners. So Politico did a very interesting article. It was actually, it's not a short article, it's a 15-page article. It's titled "The Outsider: Elizabeth Warren Wants to Be the Most Powerful Democrat in America Without Running for the President." The article itself, you would think, would completely tinge with trashing her, and it actually isn't. You know, for, I did not know a lot about Elizabeth Warren, but I will tell you, I understand now why many think that she's a strong contender, because not knowing a lot of her history, just knowing what she represented, and then also knowing that she changed parties. So, Mr. Technocrat, you've known about her story way before I even knew what she was doing on the in the Congress. So what have you found out about her so far?
Just in full disclosure, I think it's important to acknowledge bias. And so in effect, I have been guilty of judging a book by its cover. And maybe, by the way, that is the content of the book as well. But there does seem to be more to the book than just the cover. So she actually graduated from the University of Houston in 1970 and was a Republican back in those days. And I don't think Texas was Republican back in the
70s. No, it wasn't.
So she was doing it when it wasn't fashionable, and then decided to go to law school in New Jersey, and it all fell apart from there, decided to turn liberal. But I wouldn't coin her an outsider by any stretch. I would say that from a technical perspective, irrespective of whether you buy into her politics or not, I would say that you have to admire her technical prowess. So she's taught at many institutions, but really cut her teeth as a Harvard law professor, really making bankruptcy law her number one focus, and is very much a prominent legal scholar, probably the most cited person in that field, and along the lines of bankruptcy law and consumer protection. She certainly had a strong level of advocacy during the Dodd-Frank legislation, which put her in the running for the Consumer Oversight, U.S. Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. You might remember that there was a lot of talk about her running that, and certainly had a lot to do with the formation of that government agency. And she also held a role, again, not an outsider, in 2008, I believe, during the financial crisis, when the last the Bush administration put TARP out there, and then Obama's administration sort of oversaw it. She was part of the TARP advisory board, so very much an insider back in those days. And then finally decided to run for Senate. You might all remember Scott Brown, who ran against her and lost, and has been in the Senate ever since, and is a power player. So I guess the summary is very, very smart, very liberal these days, although started as a conservative, has an impeccable resume, and could be a power player. I don't know if she's got the electability at the national level, but there seems to be more than the cover of this book.
But there definitely is more to this cover than we know, and I think that you're going to start to see a little bit more of that. The article on Politico, and I would encourage you to read it if you're trying to see and hear a little bit more about Elizabeth Warren, I think it does her justice. It gives her enough of a background about her humble upbringings. It also talks about some insider stories about some of the conflict that she's had in her early years in meeting Mrs. Clinton when she was a first lady, and then when she tried to push some issues when she was at Harvard Law to the Clintons as well. So I think that there is definitely an opportunity for Ms. Warren to make her mark on the presidential race. Of course, the question being, like we had discussed with the other candidates, does she truly have a chance? Now, the article also highlights an interview with Barney Frank, who happens to be a very good friend of Elizabeth Warren. And he states, and this quote's been tweeted many times and picked up by many news outlets, but of course cut off so it sounds actually more negative than it is. His quote is, "She's way too smart to run for president." In context, the whole context of his conversation is that she knows that if she's running against Hillary, she doesn't stand a chance, and that it would go against the main focus of Elizabeth Warren is to be more of a social activist and trying to make sure a lot of the liberal policies that get kind of stuck in Congress actually gets pushed forward, so that she's a stronger and better force in Congress than she would be running for president. And then more importantly, the chances of her winning president are not very strong. So it's interesting to see that there's a push for her name. The article also indicates that she has no problem being used almost in that sense to, as the heavy to say, hey, if you guys don't get in line, then I'm going to run. But it will be more and more, I think, more dramatic as the weeks move on. Hillary has yet to decide and officially announce, even though I think we all know that she wants to run for president. I still think the timing of Emailgate came out literally the week that she was supposed to talk about running for president, she's pulled that out, even though her committees have started. And we'll see what happens with Elizabeth Warren. But I do think that there'll be more articles written about her. And I think more and more she'll be asked if whether or not she's going to run for president. And this wouldn't be the first. You know, Governor Christie swore many years ago that he would never, never put his family through the headache of running through president. And we all know that's exactly what he's eyeing for this year.
Yeah, and I don't think the Democratic nomination is in anyone's hands. I don't know that she could beat Hillary at this point, given Hillary's missteps as a Secretary of State, given probably a long list of stuff that could get dug out, and given that I just don't think there's another appetite. I don't think there's going to be another Bush in office in 2016. I don't think there's going to be another Clinton. I don't know of any candidate on the Democratic side of the House that can step up today. Now, there's a lot of time, but could it be her? Could it be Martin O'Malley? Could it be Evan Bayh, who I personally think has some appeal on the left? It's, in my view, it's wide open.
It's definitely something that we can look for. And continuing in our last story in regards to what's happening in Capitol Hill and in Washington, D.C., another headliner that's been out there for the last few weeks, the Attorney General nomination, Loretta Lynch. And we've reported on this, oh my goodness, since last fall. Loretta Lynch is the Attorney General nominee replacement for Eric Holder. She's in the final confirmation hearings. She's passed all of that. Now they just need to go to vote. It's been recently reported the Senate will not move and Mitch McConnell will not move to vote and put her nomination up to vote until sometime maybe in early June or right before the summer recess, due to the fact that they would like to see a vote on the anti-human trafficking bill that the GOP has put forth.
Yeah, this is interesting. So McCain and Dick Durbin kind of fired back and forth at each other. McCain says, or Durbin actually said...
Well, let's start off with Durbin, because I don't agree with his comment, because I think that I hate it when people have to bring race into this, or gender, but let's go for it.
So,
why not?
So Durbin said, that is unfair, it's unjust, it is beneath the decorum and dignity of the United States Senate, and then likened her to Rosa Parks, where she has to get to the back of the bus. McCain came back, and by the way, first McCain came back and said, what is beneath the decorum and dignity of the United States Senate, I would say to the senator from Illinois, is for him to come to this floor and to use that imagery and suggest that racial tactics should be employed to delay Ms. Lynch's confirmation vote. Such inflammatory rhetoric has no place in this body and serves no purpose other than to further divide us. So it's interesting, a couple things here. When the Republicans were looking into Hillary's emails, you have Nancy Pelosi saying, that's just politics. Meanwhile, this is just politics. And you've got the left saying, this is racism. So when you have politics, this is what's going on. This is politics. By the way, Loretta Lynch, who I believe should get voted, should get confirmed quickly. But it's been over 130 days. This is the second longest time under the Obama administration for the Senate to ratify this seat. The last one was Holder. So there's one Democratic political operative said, I don't understand. She had to wait longer than the last person. This is clearly racist. Where's the standard? Well, the last guy was African-American, too. So, clearly, it's not a race issue. If at least it's suggested that it's not, if you base the two against each other. The other guy got in sooner. But, really, it is a political play based on the trafficking bill that's going on. The gridlock. So, frankly, a couple more things here, right? The Dems continue to filibuster the trafficking bill. The trafficking bill that has shapes in the bill that make it much harder and illegal to traffic young boys and young girls into sexual slavery. This is a bill that we want to get out there. And we've got Democrats filibustering it on one side. Do they care about young children, protecting them? I'm not sure. Why would you filibuster that bill? Now, I'm smart enough to know that there's a lot of things in bills and they might be filibustering another piece of it. And we could probably argue that for a long time. At any rate, they're filibustering. And so don't get mad at me when I can't pass the trafficking bill, then get to your nominee when you won't actually vote. So that's part of the issue. The other piece is she was actually appointed, as we discussed. We talked about last year. This administration could have appointed her during the recess, during the lame duck session.
Which we thought they would do.
They could have done it.
Which is why former New York City Mayor Giuliani this week actually stepped outside of what you would expect him to do. And he's actually calling for the Loretta Lynch conference information to proceed quickly. It has disturbed a couple of many Republicans who are blocking the vote because of the unrelated anti-human trafficking bill. Mayor Giuliani sent a letter to Senator Lindsey Graham, as reported in Politico. Giuliani praised Lynch's record as a U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of New York and said that the president deserves to have his pick of nominees, even if he disagrees with some of her views. And he urged Lindsey Graham, who plans to vote for Lynch Branch's confirmation to circulate his letter to the rest of the senators. And I like Giuliani for saying this. Let me finish up with an article that Manu Raju wrote in The Political. And it said, quote, "How we treat nominees like Ms. Lynch has important constitutional implications. The scope and the breadth of the advice and consent function of the U.S. Senate has been much debated. My interpretation has always been that a president should be given the deference to choose his cabinet unless his nominee is qualified to do the job, has a history of unethical behavior, or is so ideologically rigid as to be incapable of making rational choices in the public interest. None of these disqualifiers apply here to Ms. Lynch." So Giuliani, not being political, literally took the opportunity to say, guys, let's get over this, because the truth is, and I agree with him here, just appoint her, because it's far worse to have Attorney General Holder sitting in that seat. And so if
hurry up.
I mean, for God's sakes, if you're the Senate, this is probably the worst attorney general you could think of, the most divisive that you could possibly ever have in any office.
You reminded
get
me that
him
he called
out.
Americans cowards.
Yes, he did. And so please, let's get Holder out of the office faster than you can possibly think of. We'll get to the anti-human trafficking bill at some point. It is important, but getting Holder out of the office is far more important right now, because he can do far more damage in his seat than putting Ms. Lynch. And frankly speaking, I think that this is just, it makes the party look bad. The anti-human trafficking bill, I agree, is important. I also agree with you, Jay, that it is politics at its best, but the seat of which Ms. Lynch would be occupying in the cabinet is so critical at this juncture, given all of the debates going on and swirling in the courts in regards to what's with Obamacare and also what's going on with the immigration laws. You have to have Loretta Lynch in that seat sooner than later, because at the end of the day, when she will get appointed to that seat. The problem is, by the time she gets in, she's already behind the eight ball on this. And so the sooner we get her in there, the better it is for the country.
Of all of the, we gotta get the guy out.
We need to get him out. So please, Senate, urge your congressmen and women to hurry up and appoint Ms. Loretta Lynch, and that would specifically apply to those on the GOP side. Well, that's all we have for our update on politics this past week. When we return next week, I'm sure we will continue on with Hillary Gate or Email Gate, but we'd love to see what makes the news next week. If you have any information or suggestions, please contact us on our social media site. You can also follow us on Twitter at Mona Lisa Como on Twitter, or you can find us on Facebook, Mona Lisa Como of Power Lunch, or you can find us on our website at www.ewnradionetwork.com/powerlunch. Thank you for listening to our show. Jay, you joining us next week?
I'm joining us next week. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Take care. Have a great week.